everybody, and welcome to the all-new Geek Actually podcast, episode one. Yes, you heard me right. That's episode one. We're rebooting. This week on Geek Actually, we are going to be talking about us, because we're our own favorite subject. We're going to talk about the original show and how we came to be bringing this show back. We're also going to talk a little bit about news. We've got a Film Actually review. Yes, Film Actually is the podcast that was demoted to a section. This week, we're going to be talking about Chappie. We're also going to talk about how the robots plan to wipe us all out, what's new in the world of weird food, and just general geekery in all. My name is David McVeigh, and I am joined by Dave Longo. How are you, Dave? Oh, that was a mouthful.
You did it with aplomb.
Okay, now that I've got that out, I got to say, you know, this is our first episode back in probably over 2 years.
100 years.
You know, 100 years. We've been gone for some time. For those who are new to this show, this is actually not a new podcast. It's a reboot of a podcast that has been in mothballs for a couple of years now. But at its
peak... It did have a few, like, reaches for the stars, though.
Well, at its peak, I think we reached 132 episodes or something like that by the time we had finished, and we were live, and we had a Ustream channel, and we had all sorts of goodness going. And it's been in mothballs because of work commitments and so forth, but we decided that we just were burning to talk about those things that just don't fit anywhere.
You know, it's funny,
else.
I'm actually allergic to mothballs, to naphthalene.
Well, I can't stand the smell of them, so it's a good thing we waved it all out beforehand.
It's working out pretty well.
Just to let people know about the structure of this show, Dave and I will be the regulars on this, and we will be bringing in regular guests. We've got kind of I've been building a small stable of co-hosts.
To
come in and help us out with this. What we described originally when we first started doing the show in, 2008.
Wow.
So it's a while ago, where we said it's kind of like the Seinfeld of podcasts. We kind of talk about nothing, but it's everything, but it's kind of filtered through.
And we're both sociopaths.
We're both sociopaths. More importantly, though, we're both geeks / maybe even nerds. And so we filter all news through that kind of prism, you know? And so we might talk about things and you go, how's that geek related? Because it appealed to us.
If
it appealed to us, then it's geek related. So I thought we'd start this off with a new section. This is something that we've never done on Geek Actually before. And I thought with a new reboot, let's try something new. And I thought we would have a section that we call headlines about stuff that we just don't care about. And the reason this came about was I was having coffee on my way to work, and I sat down on the bench outside the newsagent, and it occurred to me that all the little posters out the front of the newsagent were all the gossip rags, women's magazines. You know, there was none of the interesting magazines. It was all just junk. Take Five, Famous, what have you. Exactly. And the headlines started to make me laugh. I sat there giggling to myself because these are magazines I would never read. Well, you know, that's not true. If I was on the toilet maybe and it was sitting there, I might pick it up and flick through.
Should I just say I don't know what's coming?
No, you don't know what's coming. So I just thought, I'm just going to have a couple of these, and we're not going to do them all, but I just thought, this is why I don't read them, because the pragmatic person in me has an answer for all of these things. Right? So the first one was OK Magazine.
Okay.
And it has a picture of a white-haired Kim Kardashian. I'm not talking blonde. White-haired Kim Kardashian with pale skin. And the headline read, Kim's Tears, What Have I Done? Okay? And the subject line says, Daily dye jobs, fillers, and even North doesn't recognize her. So I look at...
I really don't care about this.
I looked at that headline and I just went, so dye your hair back.
Yeah. That's the big deal.
It's like, why are you having daily dye jobs if you don't like the color? And if North doesn't recognize you, then maybe you should go back to your original color.
North is like so young, he wouldn't be able to see more than like...
Isn't it a she?
Is it a she?
I think.
Ooh, really? Yeah.
Okay. I don't care. That's how much I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Northwest. All right. So first of all, Kim Kardashian.
The baby wouldn't recognize anything.
First of all, unless Kim Kardashian is naked, I really have no interest in her at all anyway.
Same as the baby.
So, all right. So we move on. And in New Weekly, the headline just reads, I don't even know who this is. I didn't even bother to look that far. The headline just says, 45 days without food! Exclamation point. So eat something. All right.
And maybe she's one of those air breathers.
And last but not least, my favorite of them all says, Deaf Parents Joy. Okay, this is from Take 5 magazine, and it says, "The moment we heard our kids for the first time." And all I could think is all they heard was, "Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?" And they all wish they were deaf again.
I can't believe you're my real parents.
They went, "Do they really sound like that?"
Take them out.
Shit, what have we done? Doctor, reverse the procedure, quick. All right, let's move on to some. Let's move on to some real news.
Something that we actually care about.
Do we have it? We don't actually have a theme for news. I don't think. We could say something like this.
You believe any of this voodoo bullshit, Blair?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so that'll do until we get something.
I like
better.
That.
All right, so in the real news now. Once again, this is real news, but not really news because none of this is relevant outside of the show, really. Mm. Now, I must point out that all of our news stories are brought to us by Delta Knight. He's our researcher. He's back on board. He used to be our researcher many years ago, and now he's back. And I'm so glad he's back because he brings the weirdest shit to my table. And I just, he sends me a page of links, and I have to parse it down to the stuff that I find the most amusing. And that's really, we should say that most of the news we pull because it makes us laugh. Sometimes we get serious during election time and stuff like that. We might talk a little bit more serious about things, but most of the time we're looking for the weird crap.
Yeah.
And the weird crap comes to us this week. First of all, a slightly serious note, which is Australia is going to introduce some anti-piracy laws. Mm. Now, we should state that this is not in effect yet, I don't believe.
No.
I think
it comes they never seem to be in effect.
Well, though. This one I think comes in April. This has been passed, and I think it is coming in April. Now, what they're basically doing in Australia is something our federal government is doing something that they've been trying to do for a long time, and it keeps getting shut down.
Yeah.
And now, I just read an article the other day. IINet has been a big supporter of stopping this kind of stuff and not reporting and not having data retention and all that. They've been very big advocates for this. And they're being dragged through the courts right now because the film and television industry is really trying to make a case against IINet. That's beside the point. That's another story to itself. But with these anti-piracy laws, basically what they're going to introduce is the three strikes and you're out.
And you're out, yeah.
Now, what this basically means, in a nutshell, is that they will issue you first an educational warning. So I would imagine the letter would be something like, "Hey, did you know that torrenting the latest TV show is not very good?
Did you know Game of Thrones belongs to HBO?
And did you know thousands of people worked on this and you're taking money from
them?"
Maybe
this could be their new marketing scheme, Dave. Let people know shows that they're not aware of.
Then the second warning, I imagine, would be something along the lines of, "You know that thing we sent you before? Maybe you should read it." And then the third warning will be, if you do this one more time, you're going to lose access to the internet. So now what this means is you would get kicked off your ISP. And this is, we should point out that this is...
So would it be the third warning, then you're off?
Your third warning, and then...
And then the next one,
the next one
you get.
Three strikes, and you're out.
Yeah.
Okay? So basically on the fourth, if they have to report you a fourth time, the ISP cuts you off. Now, we should state that the way that this law is made is the onus of responsibility is on the ISP. The government's not enforcing this. The ISP is. So in theory, you go, okay, so I'd go to another ISP. But I imagine what's going to happen on this is that you will be put on a list, and when you go to sign up with the next ISP, they're going to say, "Hey, we see that you were taken off for copyright violation, blah, blah, blah." How this will all play out is terrifying. And if you are a very clever geek, you will find many ways to circumvent this.
Yeah.
But as it stands right now, just be aware that, it's coming. Get ready. This is actually going in some countries around the world already, and it's rough. And what their argument is that, with Netflix coming out on the 24th, with Stan out right now, with Foxtel on demand as it stands right now, and there's another, QuickFlix is another
Quickflix,
one.
QuickFlix, yeah.
And there's one more, which I cannot remember called.
I guess there's the Sony network as well.
Sony network. Let's talk about the Sony network for a second. We had a big rant. I had a rant about this on Behind the Panels last
did you
week.
Really? Yeah, okay.
Because Powers has finally released its first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And it's a Sony PlayStation produced show for the Sony PlayStation Network. And yet, it's not out in Australia yet. Now, this is a worldwide network, and the reason why they're producing it is because they're distributing it. So why wouldn't it be released everywhere in the world at once? It doesn't make sense. And this is exactly what's wrong.
Do you know if
it
ended up being pirated?
Apparently it's on YouTube.
Yeah, oh, really?
YouTube? Apparently you have to use a geo blocker, though, because it's an American channel.
Yeah.
But some people I've spoken to have already seen it, and they've said it's actually pretty good. Yeah. So I will endeavor to keep having a look around to see if I can find it. It's bound to show up on some network that we can find somewhere. But I really want to see it. And there's been no word as to when it comes out on Sony Australia.
Yeah, right.
So, this is the fundamental problem. Yeah. People are all going, Netflix is coming. Mm. We're going to have all this great content. Please, I remind you one more time.
There's rights to
everything. And Netflix, when it launches in this country, not only does it still have to live by all the rights that it already has? Mm. So a lot of their shows, Orange is the New Black is a good example, produced by Netflix, but it's licensed to Fox, which means it won't be on Netflix.
Yeah.
And they've already said it won't be on Netflix. Seasons 1 and 2 of House of Cards won't be on Netflix because they're on Fox, but season 3 will be on Netflix. So there's all those licensing deals, and each individual streaming service that we have in this country, Stan and QuickFlix, all have their own licenses as well. So stuff that is already going off onto those will not go onto Netflix. Mm. So now what we have effectively done for a population of 20 million people is made you have to subscribe to 4 separate streaming services to get all the content. You can't just subscribe to one. So Netflix is not the great ray of hope that people think it is.
It's going to be really interesting.
It'll be great, and it'll have lots of content.
When that comes out.
It's going to be great when it comes out. And
I'm going to sign up. I'm sure you are.
Of course
well.
I will, because Daredevil's going to be
out. And the thing I'm worried about, though, is whether my internet speeds are going to be able to handle streaming.
So there's already been deals being put in place. Now, I don't have these in front of me, but my understanding is that Optus and iiNet both have unlimited, unmetered Netflix.
Right.
So if you are on those broadband accounts, you'll get unmetered. If you are on the Foxtel or Telstra networks, you get unmetered Foxtel Go. So they'll be unmetered. Stan, I think, has a deal with somebody as well where you get unmetered. So once again, all these various services all have unmetered things. Now, good news is that my home broadband is on Foxtel or Telstra network, so I've got Foxtel Go, but I'm going to be metered on
Netflix.
But I have a huge bandwidth cap. I pay for a very large bandwidth cap, so it shouldn't be too big a deal. My phone and my phone network is Optus, but I don't know if it's going on mobile yet. Oh. But if they have unmetered Optus mobile, fuck yeah,
watch everything on the iPad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, so with this anti-piracy law, which we kind of stripped
away. It's interesting, I think, because a lot of people are just going to wait till their third strike.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous game to play. But basically what they're saying, and their argument is, there's all these streaming services, so just use those. Mm. But they don't have the content.
No,
the stuff that people are subscribing to.
I guess in Australia, the biggest one, the biggest ones, I guess, is House of Cards. No, not House of Cards. Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, right?
Walking Dead is bound to Foxtel.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is bound to Foxtel.
Yeah.
So
they can't ever appear on streaming.
No, and there was an announcement the other week about HBO finally being released as a stream-only service for iPads and stuff.
Apple TV, I think, wasn't it?
All the Apple equipment, but only in the States.
Yeah, of
not
course.
Here.
Yeah.
So it's got no relevance here, and people who are on Foxtel still have the exclusive.
Yeah.
And if they do what they did last year, they didn't even make it available for purchase on iTunes last year until after the show was finished.
I think this is all chasing some kind of stupid dragon.
Oh, it's Australia, and it's old-fashioned model. It's a really old-fashioned model that they have not caught up with.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we go from that to something slightly lighter. So we go from that to who says playing computer games will never get you anywhere. The Bathurst 12-hour endurance race recently had its spin around the track. And apparently the Nissan's team, 2 of its drivers were handpicked because they were experts at playing Gran Turismo. So they were expert computer game
car
drivers.
Hey, you're
pretty
good at this game. Why don't you just drive a $5 million car?
Apparently, apparently they did very well. I think they were trained in driving the actual car, but the actual ideas of the high...
It's like The Last Starfighter.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I'm wondering what's next. Are we going to pick our soldiers because they're good at Call of Duty?
Yeah, exactly. That might actually begin to happen.
Funnily enough, a few years ago, we reported on this very show the old version, we reported on this very show that the American Army actually released a computer game, and it's still available today. You can get it's free to play. It's called America's Army, and it's a first-person shooter, but really ultra-realistic first-person shooter.
This stuff is crazy, hey!
And the idea was to show people what it was really like in combat.
Wasn't it like the Al Qaeda had used like Flight Simulator 97?
Yeah, probably.
You know, I remember hearing that. Like that's how they trained to operate these planes.
Very realistic flights. Yeah. So you know, you never know. So anyway, I found that kind of cute that, you know, whenever you can see, you know, people go, you shouldn't play that computer game. It's not going to get you anywhere. Well, here you go.
Ready Player One. Great book, by the way. People should read that.
And science fiction has finally caught up with us. You know, the idea in Star Trek and all these other shows where they say inject the nanites because the nanites will go in there and fix it. Well, what if I was to tell you that we really are at that time? So basically, science is coming up with these. Oh, hello. There's an ad in front of my article. Oh, there it is. These are called little robot grippers. And basically, they look like little starfish. Oh, wow. They are tiny. They are actually made of organic material. And the idea is that they are positioned and maneuvered within the body from an outside magnetic force. So basically, you can drag them through the body. Mm. And they can actually hold on to a payload, so they can deliver a dosage of something directly to something. Or they are actually strong enough to grab an individual cell. So you can actually send these things in to actually do pinpoint medicine.
Wow, that's
these
amazing.
Things are freaky. And once again, I should remind
people. They look alien.
They do. And I should remind everybody that all of our links for the stories are in our show notes. So you can go and have a look at these pictures.
Yeah, we're watching some GIF animation now.
Yeah, and they are freaky. They're actually grabbing an individual blood cell, which is quite fascinating. The idea is, with any kind of nanite technology, is how to get them out of the body after they're finished with them, because we know the body rejects things. These ones actually dissolve.
Yeah, I was going to say, because they're organic.
Yeah, so basically the reason why they've been made out of the material they're made out of is after they've done their job, they're just left there, and they'll just dissolve and go out with the rest of the waste that the human body produces. So it's actually pretty neat stuff. This is high technology at its core. I love this. And speaking of high technology, do you remember Back to the Future?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. I want to know where my fucking hoverboard is, all right? Because the Mr. Fusion Drive is real.
Hey, no way.
All right, so.
What about the uranium dock?
The picture I'm showing Dave right now is Mr. Fusion from the movie, of course. And this company actually who produced it, it's called a biogas plant. And the idea of it is that you can actually put in waste, and this waste is converted into power. Now, we're not talking about turning it into... what is it? 10.21 gigawatt?
No, 1.21.
1.21. Yeah. We're talking about enough to charge a battery or something like that. But
still,
the concept is there. And now that we're actually at that point, that we can actually start saying, hey, now we actually might be able to increase this and get the performance better and actually turn it into something that could actually power a car. Yeah. You know? But yes, where's my hoverboard?
Yeah. And where's my self-lacing shoes? And
well, they released the shoes, but they didn't self-lace.
They're not self-lacing,
Excuse me, something got in my throat.
And where the hell is Jaws 15 or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, so there's a graphic here that actually shows the electronic generation. And there, and we should point out that this is not the first time we have had waste disposal turning power. This is the difference between this and other ones is this takes a multitude of different kinds of waste. So it's not like it takes one device and generates power. It's actually a Mr. Fusion. You can just put in all the household garbage and it will actually do something with it. As I say, it doesn't turn a lot of power yet. But it will go, and this article is from Gizmodo that we're actually reporting on. And it's kind of neat. It is kind of neat. And there's actually a link to the official press release.
It's definitely a step in the
right
direction.
It's a bio battery is what we're looking at here. It's basically going to help charge batteries. And I will point out that we actually do have one more piece of technology that will help you charge a battery. But that's later in the show. We'll come back to that.
All these news items are kind of fixing together in a weird way.
They are kind of, and we're getting to that. The next one is our final one, and I thought the only reason why I included this is once again Delta Knight sent this through, and I thought it was fascinating. But I thought you wear contact lenses, so how would you like a contact lens that can zoom?
Oh,
so you blink and it zooms in.
I'd be like Geordi LaForge.
You would, so you could actually pervert girls across the road. So you see Dave blinking a lot whenever a good looking girl walks by, and he would have this contact in which with a wink
Is it on one eye?
That's a good question. Let's have a look here. It actually says this little cone of plastic fits onto your eyeball. It's actually an extremely thin telescope that can be turned on and off with a simple wink of the eye. You'd be looking really creepy out there winking all day long, wouldn't you? Hey,
you have like an aneurysm.
This is Gizmodo once again promoting this. Contact Lens developed by researchers in Switzerland. Of course it was. Polytechnique. So Switzerland's Ecole Polytechnique, whatever.
The only problem with the contact lens is I cannot zoom.
I want to be able to look across the road at the pretty girls. So so now you can. It's about it's the size of a normal contact, but it kind of looks like it's got a nipple on the end.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that
concave
quite
kind of
fits
shape.
Onto the eyeball. But you know, you could probably fit it onto a robot pretty good.
It looks very uncomfortable to wear.
You think so? Yeah, in its current shape, yeah. As I said, it looks like it doesn't look a smooth round like a normal contact.
No,
it looks kind of like
like wavy.
Yeah, maybe that's got to do with the blinking to turn it on and off.
Looks
maybe,
like a bowl.
When you blink, it pops out.
Maybe. Or maybe it just forms to your eyeball.
Maybe. I don't know. As I say, I don't wear contacts, but I saw this and then, Dave Longo, you have to have these. All right.
I'll be first in line.
Yeah. And the good question is it one or two? I would imagine because they say
it says on here, wink your right eye and the light enters at an angle that goes through the lens's magnifying region.
That's so it's one eye. Your right eye. So if you actually winked,
so I think would it work? I don't know.
So if you winked by accident, does that mean you've got a weird depth of field because you've got one zoomed in and one not?
Yeah, I guess so.
And then you walk around with one eye closed looking like a pirate. I'm zooming across the road.
I remember seeing this bit like in this review of Star Trek Insurrection where it's like Geordi LaForge, he's the one that wears the visor and he's looking straight ahead and they're like, zoom over in the trees. And we get his point of view and he zooms all the way in.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Riker's right next to him and he says, Geordi. And Geordi turns immediately to Riker.
And you think Riker would be up Riker's nose.
Wouldn't it be like, like, that's what I think would happen with this.
He'd say, sir, you actually need to trim your nose hair.
But can you imagine you're driving down the road and like some bright light shines
and
you wink, and then all of a sudden like you're...
And if you were walking around with it zoomed out, you wouldn't know when you were stepping off a curb or something like that. Oh, I see disaster written all over this all of a sudden.
There needs to be a wheel that attaches to the side of your head. Where
you look, I reckon we should like all just wear focus. Cyclops-style visors, which we can dial in, you know? I think that's the goal.
Like we were able to travel in time like 50 years and the actual future was just ridiculous. Everyone's wearing watches with like zoom on.
Although, isn't this kind of a step in the direction of putting Google Glass type ideas into our eyeballs?
Yes.
You know?
Pretty much.
Put that little screen, put it into a contact lens.
Next we'll like just have eye implants. We'll just take our eyes out.
We'll look like the end of the, you haven't seen it. But say at the end of the Age of Ultron trailer, but you haven't seen it. So I'll skip that joke.
Yeah.
Those who have seen the Age of Ultron trailer, the very last shot, this is what we're looking at.
I thought a cool segment for this show would be to play trailers that spoil the entire movies.
Oh, we could do that. Yeah, we could do that. But you'd never watch them.
No, like the ones that have existed that we've seen.
Okay.
Like Iron Man, the first Iron Man trailer.
Yeah, but they had to sell Iron Man. That's a hard sell.
True, yeah.
All right, so... If you ever wanted to be like the $6 million man, you could do boop, 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 boop. You could plug one of these things into your eye and actually get that $6 million man vision. But I think it is time. I think it is time to talk a little bit about the impending robot apocalypse.
Your move, creep.
All right. Here at Geek Actually Central, we don't believe in the fairy tale that is a zombie apocalypse. Because come on, that's just silly. Okay. But we do believe and have been collecting evidence for many, many years that the impending robot apocalypse is not far away. Beware. What follows is more proof to that equation. Now, if you go back, let's give some highlights here. If you go back to the original Geek Actually show, you will remember things like artificial skin that can actually feel, DARPA's supercomputer. computer that controls the military missile system that has feelings. You'll remember the infiltration snake that is like something out of the Terminator films, which actually moves and climbs up trees like a real snake.
And there's like the invisible car.
So now you're getting the drones that actually carry firearms and then can actually roam into battle and fight instead of troops. There is so much evidence that we are heading. All it takes is Skynet to take over.
Yeah, that's it.
And we're
IINet.
There you go. So
three strikes and you're out.
Three strikes and we should put a bullet through your head.
That's right. It's like Asimov's three laws of robotics. Well, there's more than three.
Well, speaking of Asimov's rules of robotics, I hope the Japanese are paying attention, okay? Because in our first story, we're talking about a robot-staffed resort that is going to open in July that is staffed by these weirdo shit robots.
Whoa!
All right. Who actually look so freakily fucked up.
Jesus.
So I love the fact that Gizmodo actually lists the article as "Enjoy your stay in the Uncanny Valley."
Yeah. It looks like early 2000s CGI.
It looks like those weird sex drones that the Japanese make. You know, those really realistic sex robots.
But
talking
by
itself.
Yeah, it really does look like one of those. Yeah, the real dolls.
Yeah,
right?
The real dolls. Yeah, but the ones that are robotic. We talked about those once on this show as well. So basically, Henna Hotel in Nagasaki is going to be opening this luxurious resort. But the difference between this resort and other high-end dollar establishments is that there's going to be 10 humanoid robots to be in this restaurant that are capable of checking in your guests, to carrying your luggage, and even cleaning your room. This is the freakiest thing I've seen. This is Westworld come to life, man.
All they need is sentience.
Well, exactly. And then we come into artificial intelligence.
All they need consciousness, DAT.
So basically what's going to happen is once Skynet takes over, they'll actually take over these robots and give them personalities. And that brings us to the next section in the impending robot apocalypse, because AI is so close now. We've gotten so close to the idea of thinking robots. And this, Dave, I am dying to hear your thoughts on this. Because
this is incredible.
We are so close to thinking robots that there is now debate sparked in America that is actually saying super intelligent AI, when it arrives, will religions try to convert the AI? Reverends and churches are now actually saying that robots, because, you know, we're trying to make them artificial intelligence, should actually be taught theology and God and religion and be baptized and everything else.
This could lead to the end of religion. This could actually change the world. Because if the robot, because this is what they say, like the Richard Dawkins idea, one of the big problems of religion is that you can't choose your own religion. You can't objectively look at it and go, I want to choose this one.
Whereas here they
can. Whereas robots can.
We actually taught them religion and they actually went, no, I don't believe
that. I don't want to believe that.
So my wife, my lovely wife, Katie, wow, it's the first time I've said that on this show since we started. My lovely wife, Katie, will come into this a lot. My lovely wife, Katie, who is a scientist at heart, and she is a scientist physically as well. Basically, when I told her this, because I looked at this and I went, this is scary. Because I thought let's face it, a self-thinking machine that suddenly goes out in the name of God.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah. You know, can we say Inquisition? You know? Yeah. But my wife actually said, this is actually an incredible thing, because if you think about it, religion is an incredibly ethereal or ephemeral concept.
Absolutely.
It's an abstract concept is the word she used. It's an abstract concept that, given to a device that is basically a logic machine, you're actually asking something that is logical to work out an abstract.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. And if you can actually get a robot to understand what it is, even if they don't accept it, that is bizarre, you know? And so it's like, if you remember going back to the movie The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, when he actually says it's trying to program his teleporter to understanding the mystery of what is the flesh. He said, because when an old woman walks up to a baby and squeezes the cheek and says, "Ooh, I could eat you up," that's not logical.
No.
It can understand a chemical combination, but it doesn't understand the nuance of it. It doesn't understand that what makes it real, you know? And this is the same basic idea. What makes religion real? You know, what is it's
faith, I guess.
It's stories and it's faith. And that's the word. Faith is a hard concept.
Yeah.
And when you're actually talking about a computer or a robot, you're talking about yes and no equations that are firing so fast that it seems like it's intelligence, but is it really intelligence?
No, it's just calculations.
It's calculations, but theoretically...
What do they call, like, the robot tree or something like that?
Well, what you're introducing to that cold logical calculation is you're introducing chaos.
Yeah.
And computers don't understand chaos because chaos means that things that are illogical might actually come out of it. And at the moment, a computer is a logic machine. Mm. No matter how sophisticated our computers are, they are effectively a calculator.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, they're effectively saying yes or no.
And I remember I'm working on a project at the moment that centers around Deep Blue, like the chess computer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
and so I've been looking at AI throughout history and the modern kind of stuff.
Yeah,
what we're talking about at the moment, really. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because that's what stopped the development of the chess computer in the mid-90s.
Right.
Was that they got it to a point where they just realized this isn't going to help us develop anything because, the computer just literally goes through moves.
And would it be fair to say that a computer doesn't understand sacrifice?
No.
So in chess...
It doesn't have human error, which is potentially the way to win
chess.
Well,
and in chess, sometimes sacrificing one piece... Absolutely. For another move, it's illogical. A big thing. Yeah. It's an illogical move.
All the computer can do is just store every possible move and make the logical conclusion. And the problem with the Deep Blue machine was that computational power simply couldn't exist to go through an infinite amount of moves. Mm, mm. Like, the computer could do it, but it couldn't play with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would take, like, you'd do your move and the computer would take 8-15 hours to respond. So it wasn't worth...
And our computers have gotten a lot faster since Big Blue, but as evidenced by the fact that it was basically a variation of Big Blue that played Jeopardy.
Yes, exactly.
And it did very well, but there's always going to be that one factor missing, which is human intuition.
It's that being able to think
outside of the box.
That's how Garry Kasparov lost against Deep Blue in the end, was that they thought the best way to defeat the machine was to start thinking like a machine. Yeah, and that's what cost them everything.
Whereas what you needed to do is actually think like a human.
Exactly,
because a machine can't compute. Yeah. So, question is this a good thing or a bad thing, teaching theology and religion?
What's so strange about this is the first thing to teach them.
Well, this is what the church wants to teach them. Now, mind you, we should put this into perspective. According to this article, in North America right now, or in the United States of America, I should say. Let's not pull Canada into this. But in the United States, America's hat. Okay, so let's not pull Canada into this yet. But in the United States of America, 75% of the population is identified as Christian.
Yeah.
Okay, whether that means that they are, you know, Bible bashers or not, that's a whole different story, but they are identified as Christian, okay? So we're talking about a very, very religious nation.
Yeah.
With very religious ideas.
It's almost like that kind of idea of, like, the president of the United States has to be Christian.
Remember the big controversy when JFK got elected because he was Catholic.
Yeah.
Catholic is a whole different story altogether. You know, so it's like, and of course, remember Obama when they said that he was Muslim. But he's not people. Yeah, right? Settle down. He's a Baptist. Yeah. Right? But, you know, and then there was all that controversy over Salt Lake City. What was his name? The other candidate.
No, I don't remember.
What was his name? If only we had an interconnected group of computers that could actually tell. Anyway, but he was a Mormon.
I was thinking myself of, was that Romney?
Romney, thank you. Oh, God. Yeah, Romney was Mormon.
I was thinking of Julia Gillard when she said she was an atheist.
Oh,
and
all the mess that caused here. And I look at it and go, do you know what? I actually, and this is getting into a whole different area, but I believe in separation of church and state.
Yes.
And I don't care what their personal beliefs are, quite frankly. If they want to go, you know, sit squat-legged and, you know, pray to a sacred cow, I don't care.
Frankly, the government's not going to help you in the afterlife anyway.
No,
so.
I don't care. But none of their religious beliefs belong in my head of politics.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we are a secular country. We are a secular, and so is the United States, theoretically. Remember in the Constitution, the little line that says separation of church and state, you know that part?
Yeah, we can ignore that.
Yeah. We don't need that.
As long as I get my guns.
But, you know, I just look at it and go, Tony Abbott is a Catholic, a rabid Catholic.
Yeah.
I don't need to know about that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to know what, and I don't want Tony Abbott's beliefs. And if his beliefs, if he is so Catholic that it is going to interfere with his job, then he doesn't belong in public office.
Yeah.
That's as far as I'm aware. As far as I believe.
It's that horse shit of just like taking it for the face value. It's like, oh, he believes in the same God.
I mean, I believe in human sacrifice, quite frankly. Yeah. So, you know, but I don't let that out of the
show. Exactly.
You
know? Yeah.
I'm joking, all right? I'm joking.
We killed a human before. There's a lot of blood on the table. We should have probably cleaned that first.
Yeah, we sacrificed my son before we started.
Abraham.
Oh, dear God. We're going to get letters about that.
These robots are going to be insane.
These robots, look, when AI finally...
It's so hard to convince a believer of Christianity that there isn't a God, let alone to convince a machine.
I don't know if I want...
Maybe they'll all sound like Richard Dawkins. That'd be pretty funny if, like, there's another faction of, like, there's a US university, and they're like, well, we're going to build really staunch atheist robots. And then it's just, like, a real just big shit mess.
Look, I want my first AI robots to come out wearing Inquisition monk robes.
And it's like the high council in Futurama.
And singing Gregorian chant. You know, that's what I want. You know, I think they should come out going, oh.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I love how the image on this headline implies that, like, that you can be, like, the robots, they're going to be of three different religions.
Oh, yeah, so it's what they
gonna,
plug in. Yeah,
they're going to be Christianity, Jewish, and the moon?
Muslim,
yeah.
It's not just a moon, Dave. But what I do like about this particular graphic is it's saying that there are only three religions in the world.
Yeah. Does the robot get to choose?
Well, it depends on what disc is plugged in. Mm. I know Kung Fu now.
My religion is Jedi. Right?
Oh, man, if only that was true.
Yeah. You know,
if only we could really have that.
Soon. One day. If they can build these machines, that we can have lightsabers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And...
police issue lightsabers.
Just to make sure that we are beholden to our robot masters when they take over, and we will revisit this section probably every week, we do have one last thing. Now, I don't know if you were listening way back in the day, but Boston Dynamics is a company in America that actually creates robots. Mm. And their robots have been really interesting. And funnily enough, that they were actually began in 1992 as a subdivision of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or in other words, those lunatics at DARPA, who are trying to kill us all. Now, Google acquired Boston Dynamics in 2013, and they have continued their work. Going way back in time, they actually originally created the Big Dog, which we actually reported on this show.
I remember hearing about Big Dog.
Yeah, so this is a giant robot on legs that could actually reaccount for its balance, and it was designed to be able to send into rubble and destroyed areas, and it could actually find its way and step over all this rubble. Mm. If you watch the video, it is creepy.
Yeah.
It looks like a real animal. They then came up with something called the Sand Flea, which was a little device that could actually leap 30 feet over obstacles to get to places. It looks like a remote control car that you can buy today.
Yeah.
Then they came up with Atlas, and they've actually been developing Atlas for a long time, which is actually a biped. Mm-hmm. And it walks and moves around obstacles like a human being. And this is in development, and it still looks pretty good. But, and then there was Wildcat, which was a variation of Big Dog, but it moved like a cat and could move really fast.
Yeah.
It ran like a cheetah. Now we've actually come up with this new one, which is called...
scary. Imagine that thing chasing you.
Oh, man. I know. It's terrible. Put some weapons on it.
All needs a couple guns on the side. Yeah.
No, and I agree. And this is when I look at this and I go, what we need is that central intelligence Skynet to take control.
Yeah.
And then it runs these things around like hunter killers.
You know?
Well, Boston Dynamics wants to replace your dog. So now, basically, you can have Spot. And Spot is a robot dog. And it looks like a giant machine at this point. But you know they can refine this. But it moves, walks, and jumps around like an actual dog. And you can watch the video, and it's very creepy, just like all their other stuff. But what it's saying to us is, we've got the chassis. Let's get the artificial intelligence to put into them. And then the world is over as we know it. But that's enough of that.
Oh, man, my whole life is going to be just Brad Fidel scored. It's just going to be...
Wait, you mean like this?
No, that's the least intense music from Terminator. It's got to be that, you know, that like...
Oh, you mean like the chase music?
The T-1000, like robotically just sprinting after you, you know.
I'll make sure I have some of that on the soundboard next time. Okay, cool. All right, let's get out of technology. Let's move into some
that
film.
Music just says we lost.
Pretty much.
Whereas we need something that says we're about to lose. You know?
I think we need to drag out some Basil Polidorus or something.
So.
Now it's time for a little bit of movies.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves. Make love in the hammock.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the section that used to be a podcast and is now a section.
That sounded really good to hear.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It was actually a section of the show, which became its own show and has now gone back to being a section. Mm. So, and yeah, one day, if time allows and so forth, film actually may come back as its own thing. Mm. But for the moment, it's going to be a section of this show. This is, Geek actually is kind of us taking things back to basics. Mm. It's taking us back to the way this show was originally meant to be, which is how this was. And then we broke it all up when we got too big for our britches. No, no, no. No, we all had a lot.
We're too
more.
Famous now.
We actually all had a lot more free time is what we had. We don't have as much free time now. But all that being said, let's talk a little bit about movies, film and TV and so forth and what we've been watching. Mm. And Dave, you have been going on the most amazing journey of all time.
Mm, House of Cards season 3.
Not the journey. No, I was not that one. Let me refresh your memory. Yes, you have been visiting Star Trek land.
The amount of times I've heard that Jerry Goldsmith score, man, it never gets old.
No.
It's got to be one of the best themes for a film ever.
Well, funny thing is, when I was putting together the soundboard, I originally picked James Horner's theme.
Ah, yeah.
Because that's actually my favorite of the themes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the Ratha Khan and Search of Spock theme.
Yes, and then I guess it sort of becomes the Klingon music in a way.
Well, kind of a little bit. There's actually more so Khan's theme becomes the Klingon's theme.
Yeah.
But I really like the James Horner score. Mm. It was the rebirth of Star Trek.
Yeah. It's a great score too, though.
Oh, it's a great score. This is actually the theme to the movie, Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
Yeah.
When
with
next
those
gen
endless beautiful shots of the docking the docking sequence,
the almost sexual shots.
Yes. Yeah.
I love the fact that Scotty comes up behind him and says, "Are you okay?"
Yeah. No, I also love after like five shots of the Enterprise after that moment. Then it's just that Scotty just puts his hand on Kirk's shoulder. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, here there she is, Captain.
All right. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
That's the end. After the credits. CBS.
So when Next Generation came out, of course, they used that. They modified it slightly and then used that as its main theme. And then, of course, seven seasons later, we're still listening to that theme.
I think it kind of works out like in some kind of odd.
And it does,
and
it was beautiful, and it was a great use of it. Now, we should say to our listeners, you never watched Star Trek.
No, I'd never really been that into it until, I guess, the 2008 Abrams movie. I think it's 2008, right? That would have been
somewhere around there.
That would have been kind of my introduction semi into it.
You had a semi.
Yeah, I guess so. Semi hard on. Yeah,
you got a semi. You watch it. Got a semi. And said, "I need more."
I got full Spock. Well, that's interesting hand motion. Then
can I use that?
No. Well, I grew up with Trek my whole life. To be honest, like my dad is a massive Trekkie.
Right.
From when he was a little kid, he's got all the novelizations, all the books, etc. So it had always been around and I'd been familiar with it, you know, like The Voyage Home I'd seen, you know, and stuff like that. But it wasn't until the Abrams one where it really kind of clicked. And that was when I watched the original series.
Right.
You know, but the Next Gen never occurred like really at all.
No, it's funny. Yeah. It went right past you. It's just stunning.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, you know, yeah, entirely.
But you'd basically bypassed all of the films up to that
everything
point as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it was the re-release of Next Gen on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Which really kind of went, you went, all right, I need to have a look.
And it was
this.
Mostly talking to you and to Richard.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're big Trekkies.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just like,
I mean, did I tell you that I'm a big Trekkie?
Yeah. 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 I gave the Next Gen series one a shot and, you know, the rest is history. I watched it all like over 3 months.
Right.
You know, and just recently I've watched the Next Generation films.
But you also watched the original.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's I kind of did it in a weird way. I watched
So you finally saw you Klingon bastard. Yeah, yeah. You killed my son.
Klingon bastard. Yeah, no. You killed my son.
You killed my son.
My favorite one is
take me, Khan. Yeah. Spare my crew. Yeah.
What does God of a starship?
I always, whenever I think of it, and I'm going to put it on the soundboard for next week. I promise I'll put it on the soundboard for next week. I always think of John Belushi's impersonation. Because they actually did the last voyage of the Starship Enterprise, and it was supposed to be like the last episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his version of Kirk was brilliant. He'd go, "We're out of trouble." He'd go, "Yes, but for how long?"
There's an episode from the original series, TOS.
Oh, TOS, yes.
Where it's I think it's called Miri, where they go, they find another Earth. And on the display, there's the other Earth. Mm. And Kirk, it's another Earth. Another Earth.
But for how long?
Yeah, so like in the last week, I've been doing the next gen films. I've finally finished that off, and I got to finish, unfortunately, with Nemesis, which leaves quite a sour taste. It's not as bad as everyone made it out to be, but it's not great when you take it as the final.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking from a hardcore Trekkie to somebody who's now come into it, I'm gonna rank the films for you in the way I would say it and see if you agree with this. I would say my favorite Star Trek film of all is Star Trek II.
Yes. Yeah.
I would then say you watch 3 and 4 because it's a trilogy. Mm-hmm. You got to watch those. I would then skip 5 for the moment, go on to 6. I would then watch First Contact and Insurrection. And then I would go back, watch Generations, Nemesis 5, and then 1.
Yeah. I think that sounds pretty fair.
And that's not for chronological, but that's the how I feel about the films.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, though, I think the second best Star Trek film is First Contact. Mm-hmm. But I don't throw it up right next to Khan because you've got to get through those three.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek 2 is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Star Trek 3 is necessary.
Yes. And I actually quite like Star Trek 3.
I love 3. Don't get me wrong. I think
3 out of all the original films feels the most like the original series Trek.
Maybe, yeah. Mm. But it is.
Even just because of like the shoddy staging in parts.
But
I think Undiscovered Country.
I love Undiscovered Country.
Is really great.
But what I was going to say is part 3 is the awkward stepchild. Mm. It's the awkward middle child in a trilogy, which we talk about the awkward middle child a lot in things. It's like Two Towers and the Lord of the Rings, and it's like
Matrix Reloaded, and
as it could be the best film in the world, but unless you've got the other two, it doesn't quite fit, And so Search for Spock is resolving what's going to happen in part 2 and then setting up part 4. So it's kind of this middle awkward middle child, but it's really good, and it actually establishes Klingons.
Yes.
Forever and a day. Mm-hmm. From that film, Commander Krug
is
the template for all Klingons to follow.
Especially when you look at them in the original series and it's just like, whoa.
Which leads us to one of the best lines from Worf ever. And you haven't seen it yet because you don't watch.
Is that in DS9?
It's DS9. Yeah, okay, yeah. Where there's actually an episode in DS9, which is one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek ever made, called Trial and Tribulations.
Okay.
And basically, they go through time and they end up at the space station from The Trouble with Tribbles at exactly that moment when the Enterprise is docked.
Yeah,
and it's all digital trickery. They actually interact with the episode.
Yeah.
So they get the computer to give them 60s style clothing so that they fit in and blend in.
That's brilliant.
And so they'll sit there like sitting in the bar watching the guy sell the Tribbles and stuff like that. And so they're actually interacting completely with, and they're talking with the original crew. And
it is so
good. But there's a line in it where the Klingons walk in and they all look at Worf.
Yeah, that's right. And Worf, he'd be in Starfleet.
He's got a hat on behind his ears, and he just looks at them and goes, "It's not something we talk about outside of the Empire."
Not in front of the Klingons, please.
It's like not something we talk about outside of the Empire. And it's a great line.
I'd actually say, Dave, that that's a pretty good way to watch them. I think, unless you know you're going to love Trek.
Look, I think if you're going to watch it, if you are,
because there's something like, I remember you said something to me about a couple of weeks ago, and you were like, "There's the net," because I just watched Generations, and I was like concerned. I was like, they don't feel like the original crew, and it doesn't feel like Picard anymore. It's just an action movie in space, and you had said, "Nah, there's something like in every Trek."
Yeah, absolutely.
And like there really is. Like, for me, like, I'd heard Final Frontier, Shatner's directed version, awful. But I kind of really liked it.
Empirically and objectively, it is crap.
Yeah.
It is such a badly made film. It is bad in almost every way. Mm. However, subjectively, as a Trekkie, there's a lot to like in there. Because there's a lot of good character work in there. And it has some of my favorite lines in Star Trek. First of all, it's got Spock nerve-pinching a horse, which is just brilliant. It actually has Cybok, which is an inspired character.
Yeah.
Just a great character. And it has that one scene, which is a William Shatner moment. And William Shatner is not known for being a great actor. Let's face it. No. I mean, William Shatner does everything as William Shatner does. But that scene where Cybok is saying, let me take away your pain. And he does that monologue where he's going, I need my pain. My pain is what makes me me. It's what makes me make decisions. That scene is brilliant.
It's brilliant,
Is brilliant, you know? And you sit there and go, that's got some good stuff. And of course, what does God need with a starship?
Why is God angry? Why is God angry?
And what does God... It's his delivery because he goes... Excuse me.
I know, and his finger pops up.
What does God need with a starship?
I think, like, I haven't regretted a single moment, though. Like, watching them all, movie one through to the end was great, I think.
Look, and I saw...
It's just, for me, it's like, I'm glad that I got Deep Space Nine to move into, and I've got Voyager, and...
You've got a lot
I've got a lot to go. Like, I'm glad, because the thing that annoyed me the most about Nemesis... was the final moments of Nemesis, the complete lack of closure. And
also the lack of feeling. First half feels like Trek. That opening scene in the Romulan Senate is brilliant.
Yeah.
And then when they
I'd say the first half an hour is fine.
It's when they get to that planet and they go looking for the parts of the robot.
Yeah.
And they get the doom buggy. And suddenly you just go, this doesn't feel like Trek anymore.
Yeah.
It feels like an adventure film. It feels like an action film.
And it's so weird too, especially when you go into it with all the baggage, like when you know them so well. Mm. And like they make really odd decisions. Like they find like a clone of Data, like an earlier... version of Data. Like I think the Noonien Singh had called it before or something.
B4.
Yeah, and it's like, why didn't they just have Lore? Like Data's...
Lore, yeah.
Yeah, they had Lore. That would have been awesome. You know,
they
could have
found Lore after the Borg had torn him apart.
Like they just tossed Lore out.
Yeah. You know? So there's so many things they could have done. And,
as it stands, my final memory of the Next Generation crew... of those, that family that I came to love is just like, they're standing there and you probably remember the end of Nemesis, and we're going to spoil Nemesis, this movie.
These movies have been out for years, you know, dude.
Basically, the end of Nemesis is that the Enterprise kind of fails, it malfunctions, so they need to ram it into the Reman ship.
Yeah.
And so it destroys the bridge and the whole front section of the Enterprise, and then everything gets all
wrapped
up.
And they trash another Enterprise.
Yeah, and so the final moments of Nemesis are all the crew, everybody that you love, standing in this just destroyed wreck of a bridge, and they're like, they float off into space. And I was like, that's like one of the saddest, most apt metaphors I've ever seen, where it's like... we literally destroyed everything you like about this, and we just let it just float off into space.
It feels like it was made by somebody who wasn't a Trekkie, who knew nothing about it, who didn't care about it.
And supposedly it was. He was an editor, like a brilliant, and he edited. Yeah. He still edits now.
Barrett is a fantastic editor. Mm. He edited Superman the movie.
Yeah. And he's still editing. He's edited Skyfall.
He's won Oscars for his stuff. I mean, he is a brilliant editor who has directed a couple of films. Stuart Baird's his name.
Yeah.
And as a director, he's always been a bit lackluster. Mm. He also directed, if you remember, that horrible... action film Executive Decision, where they kill off Steven Seagal in the first 5 minutes of the film, you know, and it's like he's not a great director. He's a much better editor.
I remember listening to an interview of Marina Sirtis. Oh man, I wish I'd brought the sound clip. It's amazing. She just flat out calls him an idiot. It's like the interview. It's like a few years old, and she's like, I wish that they'd asked Jonathan Frakes to direct it, because frankly, it would have been a good movie.
Oh,
and I know she goes hard. And she's like, she goes, Stuart Baird didn't know anything about Star Trek. Frankly, he was an idiot.
Jesus.
And you're like, whoa.
That's rough.
The amount of stories that probably went on during the making of that movie.
Well, and it feels like a troubled production. Mm.
There's 50 minutes of deleted scenes on the DVD, Blu-ray.
I haven't watched the Blu-ray.
I was reading something. I'm not sure how accurate it is. I'll have to look into it. But I was reading something that Wesley Crusher, who cameos in the beginning, at the wedding is supposed to be on board the Enterprise the entire movie, and that he's cut out.
Well, I would have cut him out.
Well, so. Shut up, Wesley.
All right. So from Star Trek.
But we should probably just I'll wrap it off just with, like, I'm going to go into DS9 and we'll see how we go.
Oh, we'll talk more about this. Yeah. I mean, you've watched so much Star Trek. Yeah. And I think it's and I don't know what the listeners feel. Send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. But I don't know what the listeners feel, but I find it fascinating to listen to somebody who is actually just fresh into this.
Yeah.
There's part of me that actually envies you.
Yeah,
because
right.
I've seen it all. Mm. And even when I watch it again, I go, oh, that's something I don't remember or what have you. But I have seen it.
Mm.
And the idea of going in and discovering this lush world fresh would just be kind of wild.
Yeah.
Because really, I mean, you think about it. Think how many sheer hours of Star Trek there have been. I mean, you're talking about three seasons of TOS.
Yeah.
One season of TAS.
Yep.
You've got seven seasons of Next Gen. Mm-hmm. You've got seven seasons of DS9. You've got seven seasons of Voyager. Four seasons of Enterprise, which we'll come back to it another time because a lot of people derided Enterprise, and I actually find
I'm keen to watch it. Yeah.
I quite liked it. And then you've got 10 feature films.
Yeah.
On top of that.
And 12, I guess.
12 feature films, if you count the reboots.
Well, Abrams ones are technically canon, I suppose.
Well, they are because they introduced Spock.
Yeah.
So 12 feature films.
Then all the video games. And
video
the
games,
ephemera.
Novelizations.
Yeah. And I was reading that the video games are all canon, too.
Mm.
And there's a couple of video games that are point-and-click adventures, which is my favorite kind of game.
Harbinger is fantastic. Yeah. I played DS9.
And it's like
Harbinger.
all the original series cast members did a couple of these games, too.
Well, Harbinger's actually got the voices of the DS9 cast.
Yeah, damn.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It's really good. So we will revisit Trek a lot, because I want to talk about some of your experiences.
Yeah.
With awesome. Maybe every week we'll talk about a season and see how you felt each season.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. What else we've been watching this week? I actually am kind of... I'm going to give my dirty confession time.
This is crazy.
This is nuts. All right, and I'm going to put this out there. I have actually mentioned this once on panels, and I'll mention it in more detail here because it wasn't the right place for panels, but I started watching a series called Once Upon a Time. Mm. And now I have always seen the ads for this show and gone, oh, what a piece of shit. Never catch me dead watching
like
that.
Me.
You know, and I look at it and I go, oh, it's
Can I say something quickly? I'd been sent the first season to review.
Can I just
and
say
it still sits there. Never been able.
Watch it. So the basic concept of this show is that the Wicked Witch from Snow White has thrown the ultimate curse because she's so pissed off at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And has imprisoned basically all the fairy tale characters in a small town called Storybrooke in modern day world.
Okay.
And they are all completely unaware of who they are.
It's kind of very fables.
It's a little bit fable-ish, except for the fact that they don't know who they are. Mm. They're just going about living their life.
Sure. Yeah.
Nobody comes to Storybrooke and nobody leaves Storybrooke. And if anybody does leave, bad things happen. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in what they've done with this series is it's all intercut. So you've got the modern day world of Storybrooke and it's all intercut every episode with the actual fairy tale world and what happened leading up to the ultimate curse being thrown. So you're finding out about which characters they were in the old world. Like the kid's therapist is Jiminy Cricket, but he's now just a therapist, you know? But he's got that kind of kind nature of Jiminy Cricket, even though he's not Jiminy Cricket anymore. And Snow White and Prince Charming were separated at the time of it. So she's now kind of this little dowdy school teacher who basically the curse was thrown because of her. But she's kind of this dowdy, you know, school teacher now. And she's now fallen in love with the guy who was Prince Charming, but he's actually married.
Mm.
And so there's all that sort of going on in the background. And the town's mayor is the Wicked Witch. And she's aware of everything that happened because she threw the curse. And there's another player in town, which is Rumpelstiltskin, who is the one that gave her the curse. And as far as everyone is concerned, he is also part of it. So he doesn't know who he is. But realistically, we all think we really do know that he actually is aware of what's going on. Throw into this, Snow White had a baby.
Mm.
And according to the book or the legend that this is all based on, within the context of the series, her child would be the savior who would actually settled the curse.
Yeah, sure.
And they actually protected the child.
Saved the cheerleader, saved the world.
Basically. And yeah. So basically the child, Emma, was actually put into this magic tree trunk at the time in the fairy tale world and was sent forward and sent out before the curse hit. And so basically she has said that if she would buy into all of this, she will bring down the Wicked Witch and she will solve the curse. And where this all kind of how she gets involved in this is all the pilot episode. Mm-hmm. She had a baby as a young lady and gave it up.
Ah, okay.
And she's now just basically a bounty hunter. She's tough as nails, bounty hunter, lives alone, doesn't like anybody, you know. And she says her superpower basically is she can always tell when somebody's lying to her.
Right.
Right. This kid rolls into town and basically says, "Hi, I'm your son." He's like 10 years old. He says, "I need you to come back to Storybrooke because I need you to help me." Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's trying to convince Emma that A, he's her son, and B, she's Emma and is actually there to help solve this issue.
Okay.
Now, this, going red, this is a soap opera.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, of course.
It is a soap opera, and it is cheesy as shit.
Yeah. But is it still going, Dave?
Yeah, it's in its fourth season.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And I'm fucking addicted to this show. And I don't know why. Yeah. And it's like every week.
How far into it are you?
10 episodes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
all in, dude.
Damn.
I was eyeing the Blu-rays the other day. I bought the first season on iTunes. And the reason this came to me is because after all of my time going, no, who cares about this? Mm. It's the same reaction I had to the trailers for this was the same reaction I had to Pretty Little Liars.
And yeah, sure.
All that other crap. Yeah. My son actually came home and said, some of my friends are talking about this show called Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
And he goes, maybe we should have a look at it. So we downloaded off of iTunes the first episode. And we watched it and went,
it's pretty good.
We didn't even say that. We actually went, I'll watch another one.
Okay.
I'll watch another one. And then we all kind of turned to each other. My wife, my son, and I are all watching this together. Yeah. And it's like, last night we got the takeaway food. We said, the Wicked Witch is waiting.
Yeah.
It's like, and we sit down, and it was like...
Well, I guess it's just like that whole cliche of like, don't judge a book by the cover.
Well, like, it's like junk food.
Yeah.
There's nothing taxing in it at all, and yet you find yourself kind of compelled to watch it. Now, I'm not saying this is going to be for everyone, all right? And there's going to be a lot of people out there who go, who wants this? But if you like fables, if you like that idea of playing with modern day fairy tales, this can be a lot of fun. And let me just tell you that the Full Monty guy...
Carlisle?
Yeah, Robert Carlyle. Okay, Robert Carlyle is having so much fun as Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
He just
chews it up.
He's just hamming it up, and he's having so much fun. And I got to say that the woman who plays the Wicked Witch, who's the mayor of Storybrooke, whose name eludes me at the moment, but I will tell you right now, it is Lana Perilla, who plays Regina, or the mayor. She's kind of hot, man. in a dead-eye kind of mean way, because she is a bitch.
Yeah,
but
the Ice Queen.
She's kind of hot.
Yeah. Once upon a time.
And Little Red Riding Hood's a slut. They made her all gothed out.
Yeah, of course, I'm gonna have to check this out. I'll watch some clips online. I'll see.
Dude, have a look. Have a look at it. You'll probably hate it, but that's okay. I'm not gonna.
We all have our guilty pleasures.
I'm not gonna hold
pleasures.
You to it. This is a guilty pleasure, and I'm gonna report back on it weekly.
Okay.
Anyway, so with that being said, let's move a little bit into film news. I don't actually have. Oh yeah, I could do this. This was the old.
Can I just give a shout out to Better Call Saul?
Just now, I haven't watched Breaking Bad, so I can't really say it, but is it as good as you hoped
it's
it would
amazing.
Be?
It's amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can you watch it standalone?
You could. I don't think... All the references are kind of partly vital, I think, but I think you'd enjoy it on a basal level.
I actually have every episode. I've purchased them. I have them sitting in my iTunes library of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Because it was always this big thing where it's like, yes, I'll get to that.
Yeah.
And I just never have.
Like a lot... Like, look, this is first-class writing. And directing and television. It's at the gold standard. So at the very least, some things will feel a bit weird, but overall it will still be incredibly impressive.
I am interested. I really am interested.
The show, for anyone listening as well that's like in your position that hasn't seen Breaking Bad, first I'd say watch Breaking Bad. Like that's something that has to be done.
Mm.
But if you really don't want to and you're interested in just like the exploits of Saul, then give it a shot because it never goes like, this is what happened in Breaking Bad.
Well, it's a prequel, isn't it?
It's a prequel, but it has kind of that feel of like, you know these characters, what they're going to become, and it plays a bit to that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that's what I kind of mean. Like, it would go over your head in a way. But some things might not. I don't know.
I might stick with the Wicked Witch. Now, because we...
I just wanted to give it a shout out because it's just there.
Because we had... the
and
film.
I'm like every other idiot marathoning House of Cards.
Oh, see, I haven't watched season one or two.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I, once again, purchased on iTunes because iTunes had a sale and I bought them. I bought both the seasons of season one and two. Haven't had a chance to watch them. There's too much to watch in the world.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on.
No, yes.
So because we have the film actually theme as the theme for this section, maybe we should have the film actually news section for film actually news. All right, so what's happening in Hollywood? Look, I'm quite frankly saying that there's only one big piece of news for us geeks.
Yes.
I mean, there's a few. I mean, there's always news, but we're already running long. So,
but let's face it, all we care about is this, really. All we care about is this. For the rest of the year, you know?
Yeah. Star Wars Episode 8 got a new release date. Now, this spun me out because Star Wars has always traditionally been 3 years between films. And now then suddenly the Star Wars Episode 8 was only going to be 2 years after Star Wars Episode 7. And now it's only going to be a year and a half.
Yeah.
So they've actually moved.
And it's going to feel even less when we have these spin-offs.
Well, exactly. And that's the second piece of the news is that the spin-off is actually going to happen. And they're giving it a name. So it's actually Star Wars Rogue One. Now, what is this in reference to?
It has the love of my life, Felicity Jones.
So the question is, what is this going to be about? Is she a bounty hunter? Is this going to be about an X-Wing pilot?
Isn't that like Rogue Squadron, those series of games? And Rogue,
So is she going to be an X-Wing pilot?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting that we are...
Maybe she's the first pilot and it's a prequel thing.
Maybe it's a prequel.
Yeah.
I don't know. Once again, it's not within the actual...
Or it could be the first pilot for the New Rebellion.
And here's the other question. Is it going to be in line with Episode 7 and 8? Like it falls in between the two? Or is it something completely different? Like it's going off on its own tangent?
I don't know. It's so interesting.
So who knows what they're doing? But we do have a name for this first spin-off. And this first spin-off is being directed by... Do we remember who's directing this
one? Yeah, it's Gareth Edwards.
This is Gareth Edwards. Yeah. And 8 is directed by...
Rian Johnston.
Rian Johnston, who... I love Rian Johnston.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to see how he handles this. Because if you think about all of Rian Johnston's films, even Looper, are very independent feeling. So he has to put that aside and go big and commercial now.
That's super exciting.
It's going to be very interesting to see if he actually has big and commercial in him.
Yeah.
Because his most commercial thing
every,
is Looper.
Every single thing Disney's done with Star Wars so far has just seemed exactly right.
Yeah, we haven't actually really seen anything yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, yeah, it's true. All we've had is announcements.
We had lots of announcements, a trailer,
and
a new animated series. That's all we've really had.
Yeah, but it still feels...
Oh, and
feels
comics.
So, yeah, and comics.
And the comics have been A1. Yeah.
It just feels perfect so far.
I don't know.
I'm waiting for the penny to drop in a way.
Yeah, we'll wait till 7 comes out and we all go, well, that was shit.
Oh, can you imagine? That would devastate me.
How heartbroken will you be if it's crap?
Even the prequels have not done any damage. I like it.
No, well, yeah. Yeah. I like, you know, we've had this discussion before. I'm not a huge detractor on the prequels. Yes, they're not as good as the original films.
No, but I'm just saying that the Episode 7 would have to be so bad to stab
I don't
me.
Think Episode 7 could fall to Phantom Menace levels.
No.
I don't think it could. I don't think J.J. Abrams has got that in him. I think he is a better director than that. So we'll wait and see. So that's Star Wars is coming. We do have... We actually have
before
a date.
Before we know, we'll be sitting in front of these microphones talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane.
We have a date for Rogue One, don't we? It's December 16th, 2016. Yep. So it is 6 months before Episode 8. Is that right? Am I getting my dates right here?
No, yeah, you'd be right.
Yeah, 2017 is 8. Yeah. So 6 months prior to Episode 8 opening. Wow. That is close, man. That is really close.
This is
kind
of crazy. It's like,
It
feels like we've been waiting for so long and we're just getting defaced.
It's an insane schedule that they're following
up. And did you see this other stuff about like there's 50 different books being printed between now and the
And Force these are going to be canon books, right?
I think so,
Because the other post books are going to be
And Greg Rucka's actually written a novel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They announced them like a couple of days ago and it's like, it's called, you know, the comic book, for people listening who don't know, they put out a comic book series. It's going to be a big Marvel event called The Journey to Episode 7.
It bridges
7.
It, yeah.
That's the name of the whole line.
Right.
So all these books are called The Journey to Episode 7. Like, so there'll be novels, there'll be sticker books, there'll be Ships of the Line books. It's just going to be enormous.
And we should say for those who...
I'm worried that it's all going to be ruined.
Well, and we they may oversaturate.
Yeah, like all we need now is the novelization of Episode 7 to come out like 3 weeks
and
before
spoil
the
it,
film.
Which
yeah.
is what they did with Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Well, my one memory of Phantom Menace that just stands out above all other memories is going into Borders Bookshop and the soundtrack got released. And it was about 2 weeks
Track
before the movie.
Track number 17.
And it just says, Qui-Gon's Funeral. Yeah. And you just go... Thanks.
You're like, oh,
fuck
all
you,
they could have
Lucas.
John Williams could have just been like, the funeral.
The funeral. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Qui-Gon's funeral. And it's like, I'll bite me.
Yeah.
but that was...
That's right. It'll be the death of Han Solo. The rape of Princess Leia.
Oh, dude.
Sorry.
Dude.
Then we'd all be like, whoa.
Whoa, I'm
JJ
going to see that.
That's what The Force Awakens means.
Jesus Christ. This took a turn, didn't it?
Doesn't Apple have a thing called Force Push? No,
sorry. Oh, dude.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
Moving right along.
Let's talk about Chappie.
Yes.
Hello again. So it's day 944. I'm extremely close now
to creating the world's first machine that can think and feel.
You are Chappie.
Chappie. Good. Yes.
It's like a child. It has to learn.
I do believe the problem with artificial intelligence is it's way too unpredictable.
This is a new step in evolution.
I am consciousness. I am alive. I am Chappie.
Don't let people take away your potential, Chappie.
You could write music, poetry.
Chappie wants to paint.
There's a lot of concern that maybe we will be destroyed by artificial intelligence.
Violent protests have erupted all over.
I'm a soldier first. My main interest is to protect and to serve.
This robot, he's got to be removed.
You can't do this. He's special.
Destroy that robot. Burn it to ash.
Where are you going, mate?
I don't want to die. I want to live.
Chappie, listen to me. Something of great danger is coming to destroy the future of the planet.
If you want to protect us, Chappie, Chappie must fight.
Here we go.
You told us so much more than I could ever imagine.
I'm scared.
You think you're real? Do you know what's in here? A bunch of wires, mate.
He's more than just a machine.
This is the day of reckoning.
Chappie, help us!
Chappie, do something!
All right, we'll leave it there.
Speaking of movie trailers that show the
whole
story.
This is actually trailer 3 and the UK trailer, so this is not the original trailer. The original trailer, funnily enough, I couldn't use because there was very little dialogue in it.
Oh, yeah,
and so it was
enough.
Just images to music, and it was actually a great trailer in that sense because it gave very little away. So let's talk a little bit about what this film is. Chappie is directed by Neil Blomkamp. It is actually the third film by Neil Blomkamp, the director of District 9, and written by Neil Blomkamp and Terry Tatchell. Sorry. It stars Charlton Copley, Dev Patel, Hugh Jackman, Sigourney Weaver, and unfortunately, Ninja and Yolande.
No,
Visser.
In my opinion, fortunately. very fortunately.
According to IMDb, it says, in the near future, crime is patrolled by mechanized police force. When one police droid, Chappie, is stolen and given new programming, he becomes the first robot with the ability to think and feel for himself. That's a very basic, very basic synopsis. Yeah. But then again, IMDb, we've come to expect very little. Dave, I'm going to start with you because I've got some issues with this film.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I have any issues really at all because the movie feels like a mess, but I think an intended one. And
I don't think anybody intends to make a mess like this.
Like, you don't put, like, there's two people in the movie that are kind of, like, weirdly absent from that trailer, which is Ninja and Yolande.
That's because if they put them in the trailer, nobody would come to see this movie.
No, because, see, this is what this... Watching those two was endlessly fascinating to me. It was like... they were more alien and foreign to me than Chappie was. And so, like, it was, you know... How would you describe these two guys?
I would describe them, like, as two people who can't act, who are given
no,
lines.
No, but seriously, like, to the audience out there who just has no idea.
Wannabe gangsters.
Because
they're South African gangsters.
Because they're what, the most important people in the movie? Like, really? Like, besides Chappie, obviously. All right,
so
like,
what we should
they
explain.
They get the most screen time.
We should
time.
Explain because the synopsis doesn't give much away. Basically, Dev Patel has designed artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
He wants to test it and he's knocked down. But he is the designer of these new robot droids that the police force is using. One is damaged, so he steals it. But while he is trying to get away with the robot to reassemble it, he's taken by these wannabe gangsters who want him to turn off all the robots because they believe he has some magic remote control that can turn off all the robots, and he doesn't.
No.
But because he has the robot with him, they say, rebuild this so we can use it.
Yeah.
And he puts in his programming, which brings Chappie to life. Now, this has an interesting side effect because what the gangsters wanted was a killer robot. What they got was a child.
Yeah.
And they had...
Because that's kind of the thing, is like that Chappie is a blank slate when they
basically
put the consciousness in.
But he learns incredibly fast because he's a computer.
And so I guess the movie's kind of supposed to be asking, like, well, what happens when you're raised by bad parents?
Well, it's nature versus nurture, isn't it? And basically, he's raised by these two gangsters. Yeah. So,
and they kind of look like a Dago painting come to life. Like,
yeah.
Like, they're all like, they're like the villains from Batman and Robin.
You know, like, and they got, like, the shaved heads and tattoos.
And like, they're actually a band, I was reading. I wasn't
familiar. You motherfucker.
Yeah,
they're all total stereotype
they're
gangsters.
Like shotgun wielding, like maniacs, like with half shaved heads. They look like art students.
And they have this belief that they can do this one heist, which will then pay off the big mobster guy, who is a cartoon character in his own right, basically pay him off so they can move on. And they think Chappie is going to be their answer. But Dev Patel, the maker, basically gave him one word of advice. And as a newborn baby, he took that one word, which is, do the right thing.
Yeah.
Do not commit crimes. Mm. And so every time they say, come and do the heist with us, he goes, oh, I can't do the crime.
I can't do the heist.
Yeah, because the maker won't want me to do
that. Like, bling up Chappie.
They bling him up.
They spray paint him. And
He wears chains
and
rings.
They teach him to be a gangster.
He walks like a gangster. It is very... And the thing is, we should say right now that Chappie himself is a combination of some of the best CG ever.
Like, unfortunately, too, because, like, nowadays special effects don't get attention the way they used to.
Oh, and
because literally after 5 minutes, you just forget.
That's exactly what happened with District 9.
Yeah, and then because you forget in 5 minutes, nobody remembers in a year.
Yeah, and the thing is, you look at him and go, but that CGI, as good as that CGI is, would be nothing without Charlton Copley.
Yes, absolutely.
Charlton Copley's voice as Chappie is brilliant.
Yeah.
It is some of the most heartwarming,
brilliant
dialogue, all with that wonderful South African accent
he's
got. He's like, what's internet? I want it. Read my book, Chappie's book. Go to sleep. He is brilliant. And the thing is, he makes the film ultimately watchable because around him, you've got Ninja and Yolandi Visser, who are horrible. I mean, we are talking staggeringly bad.
I don't think bad's the right word that I'd use. I would say legendary.
Legendarily,
I was
bad.
In awe of
in particular,
of them.
Yolandi.
I think we do have a fundamental difference in how we view this, I think. Because I think this movie is nonstop entertainment and a joy. Like, I don't think it's bad. I think it's a mess, but I'm happy to overlook those messes.
I will say,
I just think the movie's so good.
I will say,
like you literally have a scene where Chappie is like having a moral quandary, where he's like just destroying shit. He's just absolutely smacking people around, shooting at walls, and he's just like, "There must not be any more violence.
Yeah,
no more violence." While he's just beating the crap out of people, it's like the message is like lost somewhere in this movie.
Well, he's been programmed by gangsters. Yeah, he has no concept
of
a moral.
It just feels
center.
Like a Saturday morning cartoon, like, but just let loose. It's just like, this is kind of what happens when you let a filmmaker just do what they want. It's like you end up with, I don't know.
All right, so basically...
Endlessly interesting.
I would have said to you a few years ago that Neil Blomkamp was one of the greatest directors living.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said to you that District 9 came out of nowhere and was one of the greatest films I had ever seen at that point. It was genius. It was clever. It was genre-bending. Mm. It broke rules. Yeah. He starts it as a documentary, and then somehow in the middle of the film,
it just slides
away from documentary and goes into the story, and you don't even notice.
District 9 is like an all-timer.
It is an all-timer. It is brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. It is beginning, middle, and end, to end, genius.
Yeah. Elysium.
Elysium was...
I didn't hate Elysium, though.
But even Blomkamp himself has now come out and said I fucked it up. You know?
Yeah.
And so you sit there and go, okay, so... Mm. If he himself admitted that he fucked up Elysium, he comes to Chappie and he goes back to Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm going to make a film back like District 9 again.
I'm going to remake RoboCop.
I'm going to throw a bit of RoboCop in, a little bit of Short Circuit, and I'm going to take techniques that I did with District 9 and do it all again and basically reset myself and make sure everybody remembers what a great filmmaker I was.
Yeah.
Well...
I think it's a good film, legitimately.
I think it is entertaining.
Yeah.
I think it is worth the price of admission.
You know what I'd say, Dave, actually? I can totally understand people who hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I can totally see how people would think it's a mess, but there was just something in there that I personally enjoyed. I don't know.
Can we talk about some of the things that actually make it a mess? First of all,
you can totally sit on the side where you don't care for it.
Let me just round this off. No, I'm going to round this off and say I would watch it again.
Yeah,
and I will buy it on Blu-ray. Chappie himself alone,
just for that alone,
is to watch it again.
And Yolandi.
And I didn't hate the film. I watched it and I thought this is okay. It's kind of entertaining, but it is not brilliant. And the reason why it is not brilliant is because Hugh Jackman. An Australian playing an Australian in South Africa who feels like somebody imitating an Australian who has been given an instruction to say everything that he's doing. Mm-hmm. So he actually goes, typing in the keyboard, plugging in my USB, reading what's on the screen. He actually says everything. And then all the Australianisms, where he sits and goes, wow, you look like a bit of a Joey, don't you? It's like you sit there and go,
What were we talking about before? The frog one?
Oh, frog in a sock. You're as active as a frog in a sock. It's like, you see, you sound like you're putting it on.
Yeah.
Right? It was terrible. Right? And his mullet, what that was all about. I don't know. All right.
Yeah, that's what we talked about this when we walked out of the cinema. I didn't see it with Dave. I was talking with other friends. And like, we're talking about how he was wearing short shorts.
Short shorts with a handgun in the office.
Handgun strapped on. And like almost like a bum bag.
Yeah.
What do you call those, I guess, like...
quick release? I don't know what that was all about.
And the mullet.
And a mullet.
And I think it's because Hugh Jackman was told to be in Australia.
He just needed a hat. He needed a hat with corks hanging off of it. He needed a hat with corks hanging off of it. And a VB in his hands, and he would have been right.
Yeah.
Then the second problem with this film.
I would have loved it even more.
The second problem with this film is that Sigourney Weaver was as wooden as a cardboard box. All right. Then you had Dev Patel basically just being Dev Patel. I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, no, he was from the newsroom. He's the same.
Yeah,
kind of the
same character. Yeah. But the problem
is, he was asking for Red Bulls a lot in that movie.
He was, which his little robot helpers were helping him with. And then Neil Blomkamp said, you know, that whole idea of starting it like a documentary worked really well in District 9, so we'll do that here.
Yeah.
Why it worked in District 9 was because District 9 had nothing but unknowns in it. And so when you watched all that news footage, it felt really authentic.
Yeah.
But in this, you're cutting and interviewing Hugh Jackman being a bad Australian and Sigourney Weaver and Dev Patel, and you go, they're movie stars. Yeah, I know they're movie stars. You're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes.
I think movies like... Oh, sorry, you go. Keep going.
Then I hate to hammer on about it, but then you've got Yolande Visser.
Well, okay, so going into Chappie, I knew about Ninja and
Yolandi.
Normally, I should say for people listening that don't know me from
the
show.
By the way, for anybody knows, they are very famous South African rappers.
Mm.
Right? Massively. Whose real names are Ninja and Yolandi Visser, whose characters' names are Ninja and Yolandi.
They play themselves in the movie. Yeah. And they're like hood rats, I suppose. Like they are slum.
They go around robbing stuff. And,
But it's all their music is in the movie and throughout it. And I just want to say,
actually, the score, which is by Hans Zimmer.
I've got a comment about this.
I really like the score.
I think it's Hans Zimmer's best work in years. Funnily enough,
found some new notes.
I spent the first about 45, 50 minutes of the movie going, this fucking sounds like a ripoff of Hans Zimmer. But this guy really understands what Hans Zimmer does best, and he's like doing the best Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie where it said music by Hans Zimmer, I was like, oh, of course. You know, yeah. And it's a great soundtrack
great score.
From him. I was just going to say, like, just for people who don't know me from listening to Behind the Panels, or I avoid trailers.
Right, right.
Like, I try not to watch much about the movie, so I didn't know anything about Chappie. But I knew that Yolande Vissa and Ninja are in there because a friend of mine was going on about it.
Yeah. You
know? And so going in there and seeing that was kind of exactly what I was anticipating in a weird way. But when we have conversations like this, I feel like an idiot. I feel like the guy that sits in the cinema and didn't latch onto it the way everybody else did. Like, whereas, like, going through your 3 points. Yeah. Like when I see Hugh Jackman in a mullet being really Australian, I'm like, that's hilarious. Like, they let him do that. That's amazing. Like, and then when you go through, like, Yolande Vissa and Ninja, I'm like, holy crap. Like, someone spent millions of dollars to film this. Like, I'm the luckiest person alive to be able to see this. You know, like I can go and see anything else. I can go into any of the other eight theaters around me.
And you won't get this joy.
But I won't get this. Yeah. You know, and then what was your third point? Sigourney Weaver being wooden as all hell.
Oh.
Like I'm just like, that's Sigourney Weaver. Ah, you know, like I remember I was talking to you before the show where we were like, a big deal was made about Sigourney Weaver in this movie because Neil Blomkamp was announced as the new director of Alien.
Right.
And it's like, oh yeah, on the set of Chappie, when I had a free moment, I'd convince Sigourney Weaver and, you know, I'd show her production art. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, man, like, she must be the easiest sell in Hollywood history. Like, she clearly did like 2-3 days on this movie, said like 4 lines. She's not in the movie that much.
No.
Like, you saw the trailer there. That's like all everyone
And it's all in an office, which means she probably shot it in LA.
In one day. Yeah, exactly.
She probably didn't even go to Johannesburg.
It was all on Skype. So I think it was like, she worked.
She did phone it in, so. You
know. Let's say she worked 2 days. The first day would have been like, oh yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Alien series. And then the second day would have been like, do you want to be in it? And you're like, sure.
I'm not doing anything else that week. Can I phone that one in too?
I don't know. I found this movie really interesting. Even when it was like really weird and like off color, like when it started to be illogical, like really, really illogical.
What? Like when he got to fly the moose finally. Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Let's do it! Oh yeah! Come on! Come on!
Where the moose had a giant pair of scissors on it, like that kind of stuff is just like I have this running joke with my friends where can I just say,
and this is a spoiler, so hold on one second.
Okay, yep.
Oh, should I have it here somewhere? Don't I have a spoiler alert warning here somewhere?
I think it's the bank vault, right?
Yeah, right here. There you go. We're not going to spoil this film much because, you know, we don't really want to spoil films when we have to. Just a warning that what I'm about to say is a fairly major spoiler, but, you know, whatever. I don't care. When Yolande, I don't even want to say it because I don't want to spoil. When Yolande took a bullet, let's put it that way. I almost fucking cheered. It's like finally.
Then you must have been really disappointed a couple minutes later.
yes, I was. But anyway,
well, we're in spoilers, I guess.
We might as well talk about it.
I just want to bring up like where it kind of started to break for me, but in the best way, was when they spend like 90% of the movie's running.
There's
time.
People right now yelling, saying, "You didn't give us enough warning!" trying to turn off their
like,
iPods,
like driving a car.
Hey, this
not
is,
Chappy.
This
no,
this is Geek. Actually, get used to the mayhem. We're going to do things without warning.
Pull over your cars, people.
All this chit-chat has given
flick that burning cigarette into the bush. And
all this chit-chat has given you a little bit of extra time to turn off your iPods. So.
No, I was going to say, I thought where it started to break for me in the best way was like it spends 90% of the running time establishing that you can transplant consciousness.
Yes.
And then the real end, they go, no, we're just making a copy.
Let's go one step further than that. First of all, Chappie, who is a child and doesn't really know what the world is, manages to hook up a array of PlayStation 4s and using the
Sony film,
use the internet to actually learn how to map the human mind. This is some serious information.
What I mean by
I want to know what website he went to, quite frankly.
And by the best way is because it's just like my idea of like them sitting around going, that'll do. It's all right. Because it's not what's cool about the movie. Like, especially these kind of people. I was going to say, before we went to the spoiler section, I have this running joke. I've had it for years since Sucker Punch came out.
Right.
Where it's like my idea of Zack Snyder's directing on a set. And it's just like Zack Snyder being like, yeah, that's so awesome. What you're going to do is you're going to walk over here and you're going to punch that guy and it's going to be so cool. And then they do the take and it's like, great, yeah, that was awesome. Let's do it again. And then they're like, but what's my motivation? Like, what am I supposed to do here? And he's like, well, what you got to do here is like you put on the really cool gloves and the gloves, they're awesome. You know, like it's all just like yeah. What's cool technically.
What's awesome.
Yeah, he's like, what's
Richard
awesome?
Summed this up for me once on a film actually show years ago where he actually said Zack Snyder and you can almost level this Neil Blomkamp right now, which is Zack Snyder knows what looks cool, has no idea why it's cool. Yeah. You know, and Richard could never have summed it up any better than that for me. It's true. He knows what looks cool. Yeah. He just doesn't know
and
why.
And I guess that's why I guiltily love Sucker Punch. Because objectively it's terrible.
Do you know what I love?
But it's a window into a person's mind unfiltered.
I said this during the review. Yeah. We reviewed Sucker Punch many years ago on film actually, and I and Josh and Celine, who were hosting with me, hated it. And I actually said to them, I said, Sucker Punch is four incredible fantasy segments. With nothing else.
Yeah, because there isn't anything
else. No, the rest of the film
is literally like, this is what I think's cool.
The rest of the film is a rape fantasy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a
rape fantasy in a mental hospital, but those four fantasy sequences are sensational.
Yeah. Why think about a movie's plot when you can just draw a cool painting? Like, you know, like...
Oh, we're going to get along just fine. All right, Dave, sum it up for me. Chappie, would you... We always on Geek actually used to do it by would you recommend it to a friend? Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is, would you recommend this to your friends?
I recommend it. Yeah, absolutely.
You recommend 100%. It to your friends?
I would preface it with saying, like, you're in for some serious shit. You know, like get ready.
Look, I would recommend this to some friends, and I would say to people, I'd say, if you just want to go see some amazing CGI with a great central performance, Chappie himself is great. The film itself is a hot mess.
Yeah.
And it's got some real problems. But that, as you said, can be amusing in its own right. You know?
Yeah, I think about it more like the way that you'd think about a Big Mac. You know, where it's kind of like, I shouldn't be eating this because I know it's bad for me, but fuck, it's good.
Wow. You know? You have just given me the ultimate segue.
Okay.
Because we're going to move ourselves out of this and out of this
we're in a dream but when a dream
and
dream.
We're gonna lead ourselves straight into our weird food section. Now this is a section that came about in the original Geek Actually show out of sheer coincidence of just an article that was sent to us, and we thought this was really funny, and it was actually the Epic Mealtime guys talking about lots of bacon, and we thought this is really funny, and it just every week kind of spun into getting weirder and weirder with food, and so we kind of created this weird food section. We're going to continue that on this show because, quite frankly, I love it. And this week's weird food, and these are never meant to be long or anything else, but this week's weird food is just bizarre. Two Australian guys, Dean and Edward Nitz, have laid claim to having the world's oldest hamburger. So we always talk about the world's largest hamburger, the world's tastiest hamburger. These guys have the world's oldest hamburger. Apparently, in Adelaide, they bought some McDonald's.
That's a McDonald's burger?
20 years ago. This is actually a quarter pounder with cheese. And they bought this quarter pounder of cheese for another kid who was going to come. They were 14 and 13 at the time. And this friend didn't turn up, so the burger didn't get eaten. And then as a joke, they kept it around because they thought, oh, when he shows up, we'll give it to him. 20 years later, they still have this hamburger in its original packaging.
Wow.
And it's the scariest part of this is not that they have a 20-year-old hamburger. First of all, why?
Yeah.
And secondly, where have they stored this for 20 years? But the scariest part of all this is this hamburger hasn't decayed.
Yeah.
This is a McDonald's hamburger that is still in perfect condition. The cheese is an odd color.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Just the cheese on the outside, too.
Well, exactly. But you look at it and you go, there's no mold.
Yeah.
There's no
mold. The bread looks like it was made yesterday.
I mean, that bread's probably fucking rock hard.
Well, yeah, but from looking at the image.
But looking at the image, and you sit there looking and go, that is freaky.
Yeah. I remember there's something in Super Size Me about
but
this.
The chips.
Yeah. It's like there's so much sugar or something.
So much sugar and preservatives in it that it just stays around. What that's doing inside your colon is a scary thing. Anyway, so these guys apparently...
Did they eat it?
I don't know. All I will say is if you go on to the ABC iView app and go look for an old episode of the project, this was...
I reckon go on there because they look like characters from Chappie.
They do look like Bondi hipsters, don't they? So this was...
I wish the story was more exciting, like they'd found it like inside some like giant treasure trove.
Well, if you want to, you can actually go have a look. They actually claimed, I think, pretty sure it's the oldest burger in the world. They actually revealed it on a show called The Project, which is an ABC show here in Australia. Yeah. So if you go to iView, you can probably find that episode. It was about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
And they actually revealed it. So you can find out more information there. But there's your weird geek food. We are way running out of time. So we're going to end this show with our section and finally, just because we can, the funniest story that we've had in quite some time.
I just saw the title for
and
the
I'm
first
gonna
time.
I'm going to play some video for you.
Oh, no.
Have you ever thought about how many hours a day you spend online and how much energy you consume in the process? It's well known how incredibly fast we run out of our natural resources and what's worse, how much they pollute in order to create energy. All the time you spend connected, you are adding to their use. At Pornhub, we realize that by offering our users millions of hours of adult content, we are part of the problem. That's why we're going to show men how they can save the planet while doing what they do best. Pornhub presents the Wank Band, the first gadget for the wearable tech era that allows men to love the planet by loving themselves. A device that generates power by motion and adapts naturally to your routine, working during your most relaxed and self-gratifying moment of the day and generating electricity from a natural source, manpower. Here's how it works. The band contains a valve with a small weight inside that generates and stores energy when moved in an up and down motion. And we all know what exercise does that move, right? Now just plug any device you need to charge into the USB port on the band. Smartphone, laptop, camera, tablet, and voila! You are creating dirty energy. Organize eco-orgies. Turn your jobless roommate into a productive person. And now, when your partner catches you in the act, you can simply say that you're just trying to save on the electric bill. The possibilities are endless. Sign up as a beta tester, and soon you'll be able to take advantage of the special rewards program we have in store for our wanking warriors. And of course, the Wank Band is 100% unisex, and it works just as well for women. Ladies and gentlemen, now the power is in your hand. Pornhub. Stop jacking off and start jacking on.
For those in audio land who... For those in audio land who may not be quite getting the picture here, basically it is a wristband that with friction basically is generating a small electric charge, which you can then use to charge your batteries and stuff like this. When I first saw this, this made me laugh so hard I almost cried because my first thought was, I want one of these. But yes, and the first thing my lovely wife Katie said when she saw this video was, that's not real.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's not
it is
real.
But
yeah.
No, it is actually if you go to
Wank, I thought better we wouldn't be talking about this if it wasn't real.
No, absolutely. If you go to I think it's Wankband, thewankband.com, I think it is the actual site.
How much charge does it give you though?
According to this article, it looks like it's about half a charge of a phone. So it's not a huge amount of charge because remember could you imagine how much friction you'd have to generate to get that thing pumping up, you know? But it is, look, it's something, you know, and it's
a good idea, though, really.
And theoretically, I mean, they're making a joke out of it being for wankers, but theoretically, just walking would also generate energy.
Yeah, you can air wank all day.
And when people say something really stupid, you can say, you're such a wanker. Yeah, You could shake your wrist like that while doing all sorts of things, couldn't you? Oh, get yourself a shake weight and you do
give
both.
Give it to tennis players.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You know those shake weights?
Yeah.
You get fit and generate energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you could buy like 20 of them and put them on your arm.
So, yeah, I don't know how much power, but that's between amazing. That and Mr. Fusion that we were talking about before.
Hey, we're to the robot as well. I am fully functional, sir.
Geek actually is promoting going green.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
All right. If you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say today, you can send your email to feedback@geekactually.com or you can drop us a voicemail at 02. It's a Sydney number, 02-8011-4167. If you love comic books, you can listen to our other show, which is Behind the Panels, which is me and Dave and Richard. That's at behindthepanels.net.
We miss you, Richard.
We do miss you, Richard.
It feels a bit odd him not being here.
I know, but it's our show.
Yes.
Love
Richard's welcome whenever he wants.
Yeah, but if you want more Richard Love podcasts, you can shoot over to podcastpillowfort.com. It is actually a podcast about podcasts, so you can find out more. And their latest episode is interviewing us, real funny. Find these great shows, get merchandise, join the Facebook fan page, follow us on Twitter, do anything you want. You'll find all the details by going to geekactually.com, which is in seriously need of an update. Find more Dave at damngoodcup.com or on Twitter at Dave Longo. Find more of me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. I think that's about it.
I can't believe we're done already.
I know. I think that looks amazing. And smells like a show. Yeah. So I think we're going to get ourselves out of here. Delta Knight, our researcher, once said to me that we should have a sign-off for this show in particular. If you remember the old Film Action show, we had a sign-off for that. And he gave us this, and you can actually get this on mugs at our gift shop, which is Geek On, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.